Really is wonderful to be invited to be with you this morning. I know your former minister and your incoming minister, and I'm a good colleague and friend of Reverend Michelle Favreau, so I feel in some ways like I'm just meeting some folks that are being well-loved, and I can easily love you too, so I'm happy to be here. Thank you for letting me come. When I was a little girl, my brother and I used to lay down in the bed of my dad's big old yellow pickup truck. And we would go out there at night. And we would drag our blankets and our favorite stuffed animals. And we would just lay down on that flat bed and look up at the stars. We loved doing that. And you see, we lived on this tiny little island in the South Pacific. And so there were lots of stars to look at. Sometimes it felt like every bit of space had a sparkling, bright light in it. It was so spectacular. And sometimes I would just lay there, and I would close my eyes just enough so that they all kind of blurred together. So it was like one big, giant star in the sky. So living just that close to the equator, we were really 14 degrees off the equator. So the other thing that was sort of special is that the moon took on mythic proportions when it hung in the sky. And so we would see it out there over the dark ocean, and it was as if you could just kind of sail just a little ways and reach out and grab it. You could touch it. And my little brother and I, we wonder, like, what would it be like to just touch the moon? What would it feel like? What would it taste like? You know, what would it be? And so we thought, where did all this come from? Where did we come from? What was it made of? What would it be like to travel out there? Was there life out there like ours? Were there other kids looking up at stars and wondering? The great French impressionist Paul Gauguin, in his famous triptych, asked the big questions that we sing about in our teal hymnal. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? He might have continued his questions with his canvas with other questions like, what is the nature of the universe? What happens when we die? These are considered the top open-ended questions that both scientists and theologians wrestle with. They are the core questions that bring any one of us against the edge of any certainty, to the brink of what is perhaps described best as the great big mystery of it all. The most beautiful and profound emotion we can experience, said Albert Einstein, is the sensation of the mysterious. It is the fundamental emotion that stands on the cradle of true art and true science. Now, I would add true religion as well. And so have you ever noticed how so many of us, religious or not, love a good mystery? Do we have any mystery readers or writers out there? Yeah, some of us really love that mystery. Well, in my house, I have two girls, 12 and 17, and in my house, it's Nancy Drew, Sherlock Holmes, Monk, the occasional Miss Marple, and the longstanding Doctor Who that gain all of our attention and our excitement. The characters have lived in our house for many years running, and we just love them. We love reading about the stories. We love watching the movies and television shows. And there's something about watching, not just to find out who did it and what's the mystery being solved. It's the process of the unfolding of the mystery, the tenacity of all of those characters to just kind of hang in there until they find out what's what. And then sometimes to discover that not all mysteries can be solved. There's something really compelling about not knowing something and letting it unfold either on its own terms or watching a super sleuth contribute to the systematic investigation of the evidence and finding a solution when a solution seems impossible. What can you gather from this old felt hat? Said Watson to Sherlock Holmes. Here is my lens. You know my methods. I can see nothing, said Watson. On the contrary, says Sherlock, you can see everything. Now, that little exchange is from The Blue Carbuncle, that old story, which is one of the early stories that introduce us to Sherlock's incredible eye for detail, that there is always something to be seen. There is always something that is hidden that can be revealed in the looking, in the great looking of detail. And in fact, it's his eye for detail that Sherlock makes his signature as a super sleuth. And it's also his teaching method, if you will. Throughout all of those stories of Sherlock Holmes, we see someone who understands that it's not just about seeing something with the naked eye. It's getting inside the details in such a way that the observation reveals the meaning of reality. It's this laser-like quality of attention that makes him appear like an enlightened Zen master, one who just happens to have a fondness for tracking down dangerous criminals. Stephen Kendrick is a Unitarian Universalist minister, and he had the same idea about Sherlock Holmes and the stories of Arthur Conan Doyle. He wrote a book called Holy Clues, The Gospel According to Sherlock Holmes. And Kendrick really offers this very convincing argument that Sherlock's persona has roots in the spirituality of Christianity, of Judaism, and Buddhism, especially in its Zen expression. Kendrick says, you know, we think of Sherlock Holmes as the archetypical detective, the sleuth supreme. And if we take the idea of the spiritual seeker as the detective of the sacred, then it's not surprising that there are more religious undertones on the Doyle story than we have ever imagined. The divine secret within us is indeed the greatest detective story ever written. Over and over, the path to truth, that inner truth that lies in the crevices of the floor, in the cracks in the wall, in the disturbed dust. In looking for the big picture, we sometimes miss the very texture of reality that is ours to know. Perhaps it is the poet William Blake who had it right when he said, to see eternity, to see the world in a grain of sand, heaven in a wildflower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. I've come to believe that true religion and the pursuit of truth in all of its mystery is perhaps, as Holmes might say, the realization that everything that happens is crucial, that what happens in the details that weaves together chance and fate is not just important, but absolutely and extraordinarily important, that it is lit by a searchlight, that it is illuminated in meaning. Scientists, theologians, novelists, and perhaps many of us here are curious not just about the nature of things. It's not surprising that Unitarian Universalists grabbed onto science and scientific inquiry as a legitimate form of spiritual knowledge. Because there's something in knowing the nature of things, of knowing the building blocks of life, that we begin to understand something about the meaning of the mystery. Unraveling the secrets of the universe, super sleuthing, if you will, a preponderance of the evidence and testing the theories of what it is to find out what stardust is really made of or what lies in the inner world of our consciousness, that has been the human project. It was Rabbi Abraham Jeshua Heschel who describes this in The Sense of Mystery, his book, The Sense of Mystery. And he says, what stirred their souls was neither the hidden nor the apparent, but the hidden in the apparent. Not the order, but the mystery of the order is what prevails in the universe. He goes on to say, which I find this very compelling and so true. He says, being itself is mysterious. The secret of being at the core of the apparent, the known is but the obvious aspect of the unknown. Are you still with me here? The known is the obvious aspect of the unknown. I feel like that little girl in the story. Doesn't quite make sense, but yet there's something there. There's something there about the nature of reality, about the meaningfulness of existence. Heschel says, the deeper we search, the nearer we arrive at knowing that we simply don't know. In other words,
could be. I don't know. I suppose. Yep, all the time. All of those things are plausible answers to any of the questions we might find ourselves asking.
Scientist and science fiction writer Arthur C. Foote famously said, "The world is not more strange than you imagine. It is more strange than you can imagine." I remember what a revelation it was for me to learn that everything that we see in the sky, all that, the stars, the stardust, all of that stuff up there is the same, made up of the same stuff that's right down here on the ground. Every element, every bit of stardust is enfolded into everything else. This past spring, late spring, I had an opportunity to hear Deepak Chopra speak. And he's that Indian medical doctor and philosopher. And he was reminding the audience that both mystics and modern physicists continue to point to a mysterious reality that transcends this world. Both are contending that the source of time, space, matter, and energy doesn't even contain time, space, matter, and energy. It lies beyond into an inconceivable somewhere that has no location whatsoever. It is not a place in any common sense of the word. And he says 96% of the universe is invisible. Out of that 4% that's considered matter, only 0.4% is matter that emits light. In other words, the universe is made mostly of nothing. And yet it is this nothing that gives rise to everything. The nature of this nothing seems to be, according to scientists and theologians, they pretty much agree on this, that it's expanding at mathematical with mathematical precision, but it is something that no one of us really understands much about. Now, I know some people might find this depressing, but I find this rather exciting and compelling. While we may not know much about the nature of the universe, we know some important things about the universe, and the things that we know have implications for how we might live our lives and the decisions we make about how we're going to be on the planet together as human beings having this mysterious experience. Scientists, theologians, Sherlock Holmes, Doctor Who would probably agree on this, that there is a deep fundamental level. All seemingly separate parts of the universe are in fact connected in an intimate and immediate way. The mystery is not only beyond and away from us, it is also us, and we are involved in it. In Hebrew, there's this wonderful word called olam, and you sometimes hear it tikkun olam, but you also hear the words olam haba, and what it means is the world to come. But the Hebrew root word for olam is alam, which means to hide and conceal. So in mystical Judaism, the idea is this: the world is itself hidden. Its essence is mystery. The world is something we can apprehend, but we cannot comprehend. Hidden are the things that we see. We do not know what we see. The ancients called this the cosmic consciousness, and people like Jesus and Buddha and many of our modern-day saints say the same thing in not so many words. We are all part of the mystery. Nothing that happens in our own bodies is separate from what is happening to the whole of the universe. The key, then, to to transformation, to spiritual transformation, and the transformation of our planet is to wake up to this reality. Unitarian Universalism has sometimes been described as the faith tradition that allows the mystery to remain mysterious. It was way back in 1887, Unitarian William Ellery Gannett described this. He said, this is what Unitarians, back in 1887, commonly believe. He says, we believe that we ought to join hands and work to make good things better and the worst good, counting nothing good for itself that is not good for all. We worship the one in all of life, when stars and suns derive their orbits, that light which lights every human that comes into the world, that love with whom all souls commune, this one we would name the eternal God. Nowadays, we have retained a bit of that, the one and all, but we are, of course, also a religion that embraces skeptics and mystics and agnostics and everything in between, and some of us use this great mystery as the name that we call that power which is larger than human life, the power that others may call God. And understanding that mystery is at the heart of life is affirmed in our principles, which encourage us to spiritual growth. Sound familiar? Urge us to a free and responsible search for truth and affirm that direct experience of transcending mystery and wonder that is accessible to all. So one night, as I lay in the back of that big yellow pickup truck of my father's, feeling rather small and insignificant, looking up at a bright, brilliant Polynesian sky, I saw a shooting star. Not just a little kind of blip of light, but it seemed to shoot just endlessly across the sky, connecting all of the stars in between. Now, I don't know, maybe it was a satellite, but for me, it was a shooting star. But it was beautiful. It was connecting all of those stars. There was something about that blazing trail of light that cast its mark across the darkness. And so when I think of that great mystery of life and death and everything in between and all that we can know and not know, I think of that ray of light connecting all of it across time and space and circumstance. And I think, yes, that could be it. Could be. Perhaps. I don't know. And that's all right by me. Amen.